TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed. Another edition of Raised by Wolves. Welcome, welcome. Thanks for listening. I'm Manny Hill, and we got a new member with the team with us for this season. Fresh out of, from Cleveland by way of... Wait, how does that go? How does that go, Dan?
From Cleveland by way of Madison, okay. Wisconsin.
So I was on the right track with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you were getting there.
I was hesitant because I was saying, okay, wait, should I say it this way first or the other way? But
no,
anyway.
You were getting there. You just didn't finish the thought.
Well, Danny Cunningham is here, and welcome, man. It's I've been excited ever since you got here. This is kind of your first official week of working with us here at 1500 ESPN, and you're going to be all the way in. All in on Wolves coverage for us, and I'm excited to have you on board, so welcome.
Thank you. You know, I really couldn't wait for today. I couldn't wait to actually get on the mic with you and start talking Wolves. It's been a fun first week here. I know I've gotten to write a couple things that I've really enjoyed getting to do, but I was really excited to hop on this with you.
Well, it's been an interesting season so far,
wouldn't you say? Yeah, there are plenty of storylines. There are plenty of things to write about, and I kind of had a bit of a moment the other day where, like, so I wrote a piece about Tyus Jones taking that charter jet from Los Angeles to Indianapolis because the Wolves just needed more interesting things to happen this season. And if you missed that, Jimmy Butler chartered a jet for Tyus Jones to go to Indianapolis to watch his younger brother, Trey, who is a freshman at Duke, in his first collegiate game against Kentucky the other night. And it's just the latest chapter in an incredible story. So I wrote about it. I had questions. I had, like, were there flight attendants there? Did you have to sit through a safety presentation? I had, like, those types of questions. And I kind of sat back after I finished it and I go, you know, this is my full-time job. I get to write about whether or not there were flight attendants on a chartered jet. This
and
is
snacks.
Awesome.
And snacks. Were there snacks?
Were there snacks? We don't know. And I can't wait for them to get back from the West Coast. And I want to have a sit-down with Tyus and ask these questions.
Well, I can't wait for them to get back from the West Coast because I'm tired of these late games, man. These West Coast trips have always driven me nuts in terms of just having to stay up late till midnight or 1 o'clock to, you know, watch these games and look, first world problems, right?
I mean, oh,
it's whatever, but you know, it'll be nice to see them get back home and play a few games a little bit earlier in the evening. But let's talk about last night. They lose to the Lakers, 114-110. They're 4-8 on the season now, and it just all of this Jimmy Butler stuff just seems like a dark cloud over so many other things that should be talked about with this team in terms of just, you know, Andrew Wiggins sort of still being the same player that he was 2-3 years ago, and that we just really haven't seen much progression in his game. Karl Anthony Towns is sort of up and down right now. There are nights where he looks brilliant, and there are other nights like last night where he just sort of falls into a mode where he's just not doing what he needs to do and not really asserting himself as much. And I always look at if you're getting inconsistency from players or from your team, coaching is always the first thing I look at because for whatever reason, you can't get you can't get everything to come together at the same time. So right now you got Derrick Rose playing really well right now, to certainly my surprise, I'm sure yours as well.
Which is quite a sentence in the year 2018.
Right.
I mean, the Wolves broke the franchise record for most three-pointers made in a game against the Lakers, and Derrick Rose was the reason.
Yeah.
And I never in a million years thought that that would be a sentence I would, one, put on Twitter, two, put in an article, and three, say on a podcast. Ever. Like, Derrick freaking Rose is shooting 46% from three this season.
It's insanity.
Now, that's not a number that's going to keep up. But it's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous that Derrick Rose is, for the beginning parts of this season, an elite three-point shooter.
Yeah. Well, and really it dates back to, because I think he hit about, was it 45% in the playoffs last year? But you look at you look at the playoff series with the Rockets, and it's like, okay, well, small sample size, it was five games, whatever. that's not going to keep up. But then you get into this year, and it's continued 12 games into this season. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to stay at 46%, but you got to think it's not going to be as bad as it's been for the most of the course of his career.
Against the Rockets last year in the playoffs in the 5-game series, he shot 70% from three.
Okay, that's insane. Okay, yeah, that's insanity.
Which was the just a general NBA thing here to bounce a little bit off the Wolves. That might be my second favorite 3-point percentage number from the playoffs last year, but J.R. Smith shot 77% in the Cavs sweep of the Raptors last year.
So, oh my gosh.
Like, that's one of my favorite nuggets from the basketball playoffs last year, is that a big reason the Cavs swept the number one seed Toronto Raptors was J.R. Smith shooting 77%. He was the only person that outdid Derrick Rose in a playoff series.
This is like, crazy.
These are sentences we're saying in 2018, Manny.
Yeah, I know. What do you equate this to? Because we've heard Tibbs say it, right? Like, this is the first time in 5 off seasons that Derrick didn't have to, like, rehab some sort of an injury. And I guess, I mean, when Tibbs first said that, I thought, okay, well, yeah, but, you know, Derrick is still not the same player that he was. I mean, and he still really isn't, but it's like, okay, come on, now you're just sort of trying to hype up, you know, the little bit of good basketball we've seen from him. But at the same time, we get to this point now, 12 games in, and he's been, for the most part, playing really well. I think there is something to not having to rehab some sort of an injury for the first time in half a decade, because it's showing, because he's playing well and he looks like he's got his legs under him, and I don't know, it's weird.
Now, I know the focus, at least in the early part of the season, has been how well he shot the ball from three, because even when he was the MVP caliber player that he was in back when he was in Chicago in 22 years old.
He was not a good three-point shooter.
It was not because he could shoot threes.
Right.
The year he won the MVP in Chicago, he shot 33% from deep. Like, that gets by, but he didn't win the MVP because he was lighting it up from deep.
Right.
He won the MVP because of how explosive he was, and he could get to the rim at any time he wanted. He can't quite do that, but I think that this year has been the best that we've seen him do that since then. I don't think we've seen him have the type of explosion that he has had in spurts this year. Now, granted, it's not a nightly thing, and he's 30 years old. His body's not going to react the same way it did when he was 22.
Right.
And with everything that he's had in terms of injury, you can't. It's not realistic to expect it to be able to. But when he's feeling good, you can tell. And he can get to the rim, and he can still finish at the rim. And there are plays where you see things that he's been able to do this year, and you're like, wow, like, I could see how this guy was really good, and he still has something left in the tank, and he certainly has more left in the tank now than I thought he did.
Certainly, yeah. Well, and I guess my question now is, when Jeff Teague returns, I think you put Jeff back in the starting lineup, but where do you go from here now that you're sort of getting more out of Derrick Rose than I think even Tom Thibodeau, I think, realistically expected, right? Like,
I don't think anyone realistically expected this. I think you would have been foolish to realistically expect this, right? Yeah.
So what do you do? Like, what do you do when Teague is back and you're sort of back at full strength? How do you handle those minutes? You move Derrick back to the bench, and then are you still giving? I mean, he was getting pretty good run off the bench anyway before Teague had to deal with the contusion. But I guess just sort of how do you structure your offensive attack once you have to put Teague back into the lineup?
I mean, so far this year, combined him coming off the bench and starting, he's right around 29 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
When Teague's back, I think it's obviously going to get cut a little bit, but I think you have to keep him around 24, 25. He's been
good.
He's been good. Like, I don't think it's a stretch to say that he's been better than Jeff Teague this year. Now, I know Jeff Teague's been hurt for a little bit, but Derrick Rose has been the better player so far this year. Now, I know what you and Dane said earlier this week about Andrew Wiggins in a 6-man role. What would a bench unit of Derrick Rose and Andrew Wiggins look like? If those are your 6th and 7th guys, moving someone else into that starting wing spot, Maybe it is a Josh Okogie starting him and still giving Wiggins the type of minutes that he's getting as a starter, but not putting him out there with that initial five. And to relate this, say, I know this is a basketball podcast, but in baseball, there's the whole shift to using a reliever as an opener just mm-hmm. for the matchup purposes.
Yep.
What if you use Josh Okogie in that sense there?
Like
have him in that, instead of calling him a, I mean, I know you get, everyone wants to be a starter, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get that. Like, there's respect with, oh, I'm a starter in the NBA. Cool.
Paging Carmelo Anthony.
Yes,
paging
exactly.
Carmelo Anthony.
Exactly, 100%. Let Josh Okogie be part of your initial five, and if you can bring Andrew Wiggins and Derrick Rose off the bench and be able to provide some instant impact on offense there, that's a pretty good bench unit. Now, I know Wiggins is up and down in a disappointment, but if those two come off the bench there, I think that's kind of something that you could work with and create. There, maybe there's not a ton of drop-off from that first unit, or the initial unit, excuse me, to the second unit. And I know this will all change when Jimmy Butler's gone, and before they play another game, he could be gone, and this could be a meaningless topic of conversation, but it's something worth looking at, I think.
Yeah, and at this point with Andrew Wiggins, I mean, listen, he is, and me and Dane talked about this earlier this week, he is not going to become the player that is going to be worth this contract. It's just not going to happen. But at this point, I think you have to find the best possible way to get the most you possibly can out of him. And if that is moving him to the bench and letting him just be a primary scoring option off the bench, you know, going up against second units, then I think that, I mean, I think it's worth exploring at least. And maybe not having him be, and this is where, to your point, where if you have Derrick Rose sort of leading that second unit and being sort of the ball handler and the creator, Wiggins doesn't have to have the ball in his hands to be effective offensively. You can get him in a situation where he's moving around, which I wish he would do more anyway.
He needs to have the ball in his hands to be engaged.
Apparently, yeah.
That's the problem.
That's the problem, yeah. I mean, it's how many times, and you're seeing this too, how many times is he just sitting out there on the three-point line and he's not doing anything? He's just standing there watching Jimmy Butler dribble the ball, watching Jeff Teague dribble the ball, watching Derrick Rose dribble the ball, and watching Karl-Anthony Towns try to post up. And when Towns gets the ball, he's trying to do what he does. And Wiggins is just standing on the wing at the three-point line, just standing there, not even looking like he's ready for a pass.
And that's
just
the issue.
Standing there. Yeah.
The whole standing there and not doing anything, at times, this is going to sound wild to say, but at times that has value. Because if you are a decent three-point shooter and you're standing in that spot, you don't have to move to affect the defense because you have a certain type of gravity where you can't necessarily, your defender can't pull too far away from you to help out because your presence.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily have an issue with him standing there because I think his three-point game has been a little bit better this year. But the issue is that he looks disinterested.
Right.
It's not that he's standing on the wing waiting for the ball. It's that it looks like he's standing on the wing waiting for the game to be over.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
He's like a spectator almost. Like, he's just sitting there watching the game, and he's watching a 4-on-5 basketball game almost.
And there were a couple instances last night where he did that, and then, like, he's a pass away, and he doesn't look ready for the ball. And then the ball comes in when he knocks down a three. I'm like, well, whatever. Like, come on. You look like you're not ready, and then you bury a three. Like, what are you doing to me? If I'm going to pick on you because you're standing around not doing anything, I need you to miss a shot so I can, my narrative works. But it hasn't, because he made a couple shots doing that last night. But it's a bother to see. Like, it looks like he's genuinely disengaged and disinterested in the offense at times.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, if there's just another way to, like you mentioned, like, the only time he really seems to be interested is when he has the ball in his hands. The problem with that, though, is that he's not a very good ball handler. He can't handle the ball. He can't create shots for himself. And when he tries to, somebody's stripping the ball, or he's turning it over, or it's not, for whatever reason, it's just not good. And I just wonder if a better way to get him to get more effective shots is to get him moving around when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, get him cutting to the basket more. And we just don't really see enough of that. And we were talking before we started taping here about, there was a pass that Cat made out of the post to a cutting Taj Gibson. Okay, great play. That it worked out perfectly, and Taj knew what to do.
And
that,
it was
in
a
that
great
moment.
Read by both of them. It was It was when Taj had the ball on the right block. LeBron came over to double him. Taj recognized that a defender vacated the spot, so he cut to the rim. Cat recognized that he was getting double, got the ball right out of his hands, right to Taj, cutting for a dunk. It was perfect. It was right at the end of the second quarter. If you want to go out and watch that play, or even when this is prepared later, I'll tweet the link out with that video so you can see it. It was perfect. And you would like to see Wiggins do that more. And, and you know, I know that their games don't compare in terms of three-point shooting ability, but if Wiggins could have the cutting ability of Klay Thompson, how much better of a basketball player would he be? I know he's never going to be able to shoot the ball like Klay because very few people that have ever played basketball can.
Right.
But if Wiggins could just have the cutting ability to the rim like Klay does, he would be so much better.
And you know that he, you know it's there because he's a freak athlete.
And
it's
the thing is, like, Klay can't dribble either. Klay might be the best player in the NBA that cannot dribble. I think when he had that 60-point game, what was it, last year in three quarters, he took 11 dribbles the entire time. The man cannot dribble at all. He's got to be one of the worst dribbling guards in the league, but it doesn't matter. They find other ways for him to be effective. Obviously, he's a better three-point shooter than Andrew Wiggins will ever be. But if Wiggins could cut like that, I think he and the Wolves would be in much better position than they are.
How do they find some more consistency with Cat? I mean, because last night he did not really have a very good game, and but you see him do certain things and you're like, yes, that's that is why he is getting the money that he's getting, and that's why he is still viewed as like one of the best young players in the league. But it just this year, obviously for certain reasons, the Jimmy Butler thing has been a big issue. We just haven't been able to find that consistency from him. He has a great game and then he turns around and has a game like he had last night. And I don't know what the answer is right now. I don't know how you get.
Do you want the long answer or short answer?
Well, I'm going to guess the long answer is parting ways with the head coach.
No, that's the short answer.
That's the short answer.
Short answer is get rid of Jimmy Butler, get rid of Tibbs, and I think we see an engaged Cat.
Yeah.
Like truthfully, that's – or play on national TV every night. Because if you look at – he played well in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. It was quarters 2 through 4 that he struggled. But first quarter, he had 9 points. He was passing the ball well. He looked engaged. I think he had 3 blocks in the first quarter. He stripped LeBron and made a really nice play at the rim in transition. Like, he had a very good first quarter. I was like, oh, he showed up to play tonight. It's on national TV. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you could find him more engaged if someone else was leading the ship and Jimmy Butler wasn't there. Like, if it was his show and not in the cloud of dysfunction and no Tibbs, like, I think we would see a better Karl Anthony Towns. The Wolves are not getting the most out of him right now. And if you sign him to that deal, which they did, you need to do everything in your power to make sure that you get the most out of this guy. You've recognized him as your franchise player.
Mm-hmm.
You have to try and maximize his value. And you're not setting him up for success right now. And that's the problem.
Yeah, I just, so much of this stuff has been, I mean, because I'm of the belief that it's not just about, you know, as coach, you know, as a coach, and look, Tom Thibodeau knows more about coaching than I could even imagine.
Allegedly.
See, I was trying to be nice.
I don't think this is a place for being nice right now, Manny.
That's very true.
I mean,
that's
they're what, 4-8?
4-8,
on the verge of going winless on a West Coast trip.
0-7 on the road.
And Sacramento is not the easiest place to play right now. The Kings are playing well. They were competitive with the Raptors last night. They could go winless on the road, winless on a West Coast trip, drop to 4-9.
Yeah.
This isn't the time to be nice.
Very true.
Sorry.
Very true. No, you're good. I appreciate your passion, and I share it. Trust me. Trust me.
And I don't even... I have never once been a fan of this team, but right. I see all these things.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote following the Lakers game that the game against the Kings is a must win. It's November 8th right now, and it's a must win.
It's the 13th game, and that, it feels like a must win.
That should not happen in the NBA. Like, if they lose this game to the Kings, I don't think they have an option of whether or not they need to trade Butler and get rid of Tibbs.
Yeah, I just feel like you have to – part of being a good coach is you have to be able to connect to players and get the most out of everybody that you have. And when your star player, one of your star players is underperforming for whatever reason, it's your job as the coach, oh, and by the way, you're the president of basketball operations, to rectify it. You have to, whatever it may be that you need to do, you have to do it. That's part of your job. That's part of why you are being paid $8 million a year, is to not just put in a system and bark at people on the sidelines. You've got to you've got to instill a culture, and you've got to get people to buy into it. And when people are not buying into it, you got to look at yourself and say, what do I need to do to get Karl Anthony Towns to perform better? What do I need to do to get Andrew Wiggins to perform better? It's not just, you know, right now we're in a situation where his Bulls guys are playing well. Butler's playing well.
Taj Gibson's playing well.
Taj Gibson's playing well.
Taj Gibson is knocking down threes, which is a very, very good development for this team. I think last night he was 4 of 6 on corner threes, or 3 of 6 on corner threes, or 3 of 5. One of those things. He shot the ball well from the corner last night. And Taj Gibson doing that's a huge plus.
Yeah.
But getting back to the coaching thing here, how many times have we seen franchises that are not middling but doing okay? Like, look at the Golden State Warriors the year before they won the title in 2015. So the last
year of Mark Jackson.
Yes. Yep. They made that change, and that change of scenery for that team was perfect. Mm-hmm. They developed from a team that was a 55-win team. They won 67 games, won the title. The next year, the Cavs fired their coach in the middle of the season. They were in first place in the East with a 31-11 record in January. Fired David Blatt and won the title. And I will go to my grave saying that that team does not win the title without firing David Blatt that year.
Yeah.
Look at the Milwaukee Bucks right now. Mm-hmm. They were a team that could not figure it out under Jason Kidd and Joe Prunty in the previous couple of years. I know Kidd was fired halfway through last season, and Joe Prunty was never going to be the man for that job. Brought in Mike Budenholzer, and look how good they look right now.
Yeah.
We saw firsthand.
Coaching matters.
Yes.
It matters.
I'm not saying that the Wolves are going to go from what they are now to the Golden State Warriors because of a different coach, but they 1,000% can improve because of a change of scenery. It's not a fit right now, and that's a problem. Fit matters. I don't care how good of a coach Tibbs has been in the past. He's not the right coach for this team right now, and that's the problem.
Well, and let's look at Tibbs' tenure with Chicago for a second here, too. I mean, it wasn't a bad tenure, but why? What about that Bulls tenure has anybody thinking right now that we can't let this guy go? Like, we have to keep this guy. Like, we have to, you know, they've got to buy into what he's doing, and this, he's got it going the right way. Like, what about that Bulls tenure is suggesting that Tom Thibodeau is just absolutely the right coach for this group?
The only thing that I could see being looked at is making excuses for it is, oh, well, his MVP got hurt. He did. Like, that derailed his tenure a little bit. Oh, he ran into LeBron in the Heat or LeBron in the Cavs. He did. That derailed his tenure. I think that if LeBron's not on the Heat in 2011, that Bulls team goes to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
If LeBron doesn't hit that shot against the Bulls in 2015 in Game 4 that ties the series up at 2, that Bulls team probably goes to the finals. So if you can make the excuse and say, you know, oh, he was probably his MVP tearing an ACL away from going to the finals. Or, oh, he was LeBron James not hitting a shot away from going to the finals one year. Oh, he was arguably the greatest basketball player of all time away from not going to the finals. I get it. But you also have to look, how much has the game changed since 2011?
Mm-hmm.
How much has the game changed since even 2015? Those are things you have to look at.
Yeah. Well, and I think, what was the year that the Bulls got beat in the first round? Was that 2013, where they got beat by the Wizards in the first round?
I want to say that was 2012.
2012? Well, no, 2012 was that's when Derrick Rose tore his ACL, and the Sixers knocked him out as the 8 seed. I'm talking about the next, I think it was the next year, they got beat by the Wizards, I think, in the first round in like 6 games or something like that. And they were, I mean,
in 2013, they beat the Nets in the first round in 7 games.
So it must have been 14.
And then they lost to the Heat in the semis in 5 games.
Okay. So it must have been 2014 then. Because I remember 1 year they got beat by the Wizards.
2014,
in the first round.
They lost in 5 games to the Wizards.
Okay, that's what I was thinking about.
But I think that that was the 5-4 series.
Okay. Well, that kind of derails my point. But
Derrick Rose didn't play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just look at it like this. I think to your point, the game has changed and the league has evolved, and it's just like this team is still behind, and you can't just be a guy that just barks at everybody on the sidelines and just think that that's just the way to do it. I mean, just because that worked for Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose and Carlos Boozer 6 years ago doesn't mean that that's going to work for Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. And you have to be able to adjust to your personnel. You have to know your personnel and say, okay, I can't coach this guy the same way I coached that guy 7 years ago. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest problem right now, is that he does not know how, he doesn't really understand his personnel to me.
And I don't know whether or not he's the one to give credit to here, but I will say this, that the Wolves are shooting three-pointers at a rate much higher than they were last year.
Oh, for sure.
Or really any time in Tom Thibodeau's career.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they knocked down 20 shots against the Lakers. Last year, they were last in the NBA in terms of three-pointer attempts per game. This year, they're shooting over 33s a game, which is 11th place or 9th place, I believe. That's 8 attempts higher than last year. That's a big deal. Now, I realize they're never going to be the 2015 Warriors or the 2016-17 Cavs in terms of just bombing away from threes.
But they're recognizing it. They are realizing that they need to shoot more of it. Yeah,
and a big factor in that is Taj Gibson knocking down and even attempting corner threes.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to these guys don't have to be Steph Curry or Klay Thompson or KD or Kyle Korver from behind
the
arc.
This is what we talked about.
They don't need
to
be that. They just need to be able to take these shots, because it opens up so much more offensively if defenses have to respect the fact that you are going to shoot. And I know Dane said this the other day. Be Aaron Baines if you're Taj Gibson.
Yeah.
Just be able to shoot out there. And I was covering the Bucks last year when Aaron Baines started shooting three-pointers in that first-round Milwaukee-Boston series. And I was like, oh, my God, Aaron Baines is knocking down threes. This is new. Like, I was sitting next to Jack Maloney, who covers the Bucks for CBSSports.com, and I looked at him. I go, Aaron Baines has made more threes in the series than he had his entire career combined.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to be explosive. You need to be able to draw that opposing five out.
Well, look at John Henson.
When
the Bucks came in here a week and a half ago, or I guess almost 2 weeks ago now, and just throttled the Wolves by 30, I'm looking at John Henson, who I think going into the season had hit one three-pointer in his life, and he's thrown up three. He ended up hitting three in that game. And it's like, come on, like if these guys are able to, if these coaches around the league are allowing their big guys who are not normally three-point shooters to take threes, because you have to make your opponent think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make your opponent have that thought in the back of their mind that, okay, this guy, they're even going to have this guy shoot threes. So let's pay attention to that. And that opens up the floor for your other guys to succeed. So, yeah, I mean, that's. To Tibbs' credit, he has done that, and that's probably the one thing I will give him credit for.
Yes,
right now
credit is deserved there, because that's an advancement offensively I did not see this team taking. And granted, a lot of their 3-point percentage being up, and they're, I believe, in 9th in the league right now in 3-point percentage. I could be wrong there. A big reason for that is Derrick Rose is hitting 46% of his threes, which is not something anyone expected. And getting back to your point about John Henson, that's a big reason why the Bucks have been so successful.
Yeah.
Is because they can just draw everyone out of the paint, and they have one of the best guys in the world at getting to the rim in Giannis. I was, when the Bucks played their first home game this year against the Pacers, I was still working my old job. I was covering the Bucks. I was at that game, and that was in their season opening game against Charlotte. I don't believe John Henson took or made any threes, but against the Pacers in their first home game, John Henson made two threes. I'm like, oh my God, he's never done that.
Right.
Like, that's new. And that's what it is with Taj Gibson here. Now, granted, he's taken them at a slightly higher clip than John Henson throughout his career, but still nothing to write home about. And now he's take. I mean, he took five threes last night. That's big for them.
That's huge. Okay, so offensively, the Wolves are not looking exactly the way I would hope they would look, but they've been effective, and they've been shooting threes, and they're making them at a decent clip, and Rose is hitting them, and you know Taj is making a few here and there. Defensively, though, is where where most of the issues with this team lie. And this to me again goes back to coaching, because this was Tom Thibodeau's bread and butter, right? Like this is why they brought him in, was to help improve this team defensively, because when he took over 2 years ago, they were a young team that had no idea what they were doing on defense. And he was supposed to come in and implement a defensive mindset and culture that we have just not, in two plus seasons now, we have not seen from this team consistently at all.
Yeah, and a big reason maybe is his system defensively not what it is built for, not built for today's NBA.
That's my thought.
Because if you look at what, you know, his offense in 2011 with the Bulls worked. The NBA was different in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
His defense with the Bulls in 2011 worked. Once again, NBA right now is much different than it was. So that's a big deal. Now, I would have to dive into these numbers here, but that's a thought. Another thought could be, this team is in a massive cloud of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
Why would these guys care? Why do these guys care to play defense? Because how much of defense is, one, yes, about the system, and you have to be put in the proper position, you have to know what you're doing. But the second most important part of defense is just effort. That's why Josh Okogie looks like the best defender out there. Now, I know he's got long arms and he's built for it, but he shouldn't be the best defender on this team.
He's trying, though, active.
And that's what stands out. I think last night Mike Breen referred to him as like an energy bar for the team. And Mike Breen's right. He's the guy that tries every minute that he's out there. And you need a bit of that. Now, yes, you need talent. And I'm very high on Josh Okogie, and he's got talent. But so much of being good defensively is being a high-energy guy. And the Wolves right now don't have enough of that.
Yeah, and I wonder just how you even get that. Because I don't know if
you need a culture reset, man.
Yes,
that's what it is.
I know, man. Yeah, I mean this is why it's been so frustrating, because this team is, when you look at this roster and the talent that's on this roster, they shouldn't be 4-8, man.
No.
They should not be 4-8. They're better than this.
And how many things have we said, both on this podcast today or just you and I talking or things that have been written, how much of it just goes back to it's not a good fit right now? Everything.
That's what I've been trying to tell
people. Everything goes back to the fact that this is not a good coaching fit. Jimmy Butler does not want to be here, and it affects everything. I don't care what he says about it not being a distraction. It is. When someone on that team doesn't want to be there, and it is being played out in a public forum.
And he's picking and choosing what games he wants to play in.
Yes. Like, the Wolves are in danger of falling to 4-9 tomorrow night in Sacramento, and I bet Jimmy Butler doesn't play. I would be stunned. Now, this is not sourced. I'm not reporting this, and I'm putting it on record that I am not.
But you're just going off of what we've seen so far through, you know, the first 12 games of the year, that he's just picking and choosing when he's playing.
If you were on a West Coast trip, name the city out West you would least want to play in.
Sacramento, probably.
Where are they tomorrow night?
Sacramento.
Exactly. Why would he want to play in Sacramento? If they were not playing the Lakers in Los Angeles, I don't think he would have played on Wednesday night. But it was a national TV game at the Staples Center. Of course he's playing then. So he's not going to play at the Mattress One Arena or whatever it is out in Sacramento now on Friday night. No one cares about that game.
Golden One Center or something like that it's called. I think something like that. I don't know.
I need to look it up now because I forget. But
yeah,
why would he want to play in that game tomorrow night? What does he have to gain?
What incentive does he have to play
in
that game?
He doesn't care about the Wolves record. Why would he? He doesn't want to be here.
Because he's on his way out. He thinks he's on his way out. So
he does not care what the Wolves record is after tomorrow night. And it's the Golden One Center. You were right. I don't. I think it,
I only
to
know
be
that because I'm a nerd, though. Because I
should have known that. And
no, you're
that's
good.
That's one of the bad arena. There are a lot of bad arena names in the NBA. Like there are tons of like Smoothie King Center in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Come on. There's like two American Airlines ones. There's one in Dallas and one in Miami.
And I always get it mixed up. Which one is Center and which one is Arena? I always get it mixed up. Which one is Dallas or Miami? But that's neither here nor there. Okay, before we get out of here, let's, I mean, people have been hearing your voice, and it's been fantastic. Let's get to know you a little bit here before we get on out of here.
All right, let's
do it. So people know who is Danny Cunningham. All right, so you are a Cleveland native.
Correct. Born and raised in Cleveland, went to college in the greater Cleveland area. Worked at ESPN Cleveland for a few years, covered LeBron and the Cavs, so I've seen quite a few interesting things. Now, the Cavs are also an incredibly dysfunctional franchise. I don't care that if LeBron there or not doesn't change the fact that they're dysfunctional, because they were. They just happened to, you know, their arena happened to be 35 minutes from where the greatest player in the NBA was born. So that's why they won a title.
So you have, growing up in Cleveland, you have experienced your share of heartbreak, just have here in Minnesota and just about every sport imaginable. How have you dealt with it? How have you handled that? Because I think more than anything, I mean, we here in Minnesota can totally identify with just like the heartbreak and the dysfunction that we've seen with our own franchises here over the years. But how would you, what is your advice to the rest of us here as you get here and start to learn that we sort of feel and share your pain?
I mean, I don't want to just encourage drinking, but have a drink, because there you're right. There's been a lot of heartbreak here, obviously, and I'm not a Minnesota native, but I can empathize with them because I've been through it, and I know that Cleveland has a title in my lifetime, and it was a really cool moment, and yes, getting to experience that both personally and professionally was awesome. Like I always say my favorite thing that I've ever covered was the Cavs 2016 parade. That was an incredible day that I'll absolutely never forget. It was awesome. But there's been so much bad. I mean, the Browns haven't had a quarterback since 99, and the hope is that Baker Mayfield's the guy. But they've been so bad to the point where it's not even worth heartbreak anymore. It's just like, do I want to subject myself to this on Sundays? Like, are they worth my time? I mean, they went 0-16. They went 1-15 and then 0-16.
See, and that is, I'm getting the sense that that is where some Wolves fans are right now with this team, is that they are feeling like, because I've had people tweet at me about this, like just sort of this, why am I even wasting my time with this team right now?
And
like,
I get
they're not giving me anything to really be excited about right now, because again, this Butler thing is this huge cloud over everything. That you know, there's some good things on this team that should be talked about.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Josh Okogie looks like he's going to be a player in this league for a long time. Maybe not an all-star player, but he's going to be a very good player, it looks like. And we can't even get, like, super excited about that right now until this Jimmy Butler thing sort of resolves itself. And until they get a head coach in place that is going to really get the most out of a guy like Josh Okogie and not just play him 12 minutes like he did last night.
Here's my question. Right now, on November 8th, 2018, if you had to put money on who will have a better NBA career in 20 years, who will we look back on as a better basketball player? Will it be Josh Okogie or Andrew Wiggins?
Oh, it's Okogie.
And that's bad.
Yeah.
Because Andrew Wiggins was a number one pick.
And Andrew Wiggins has already gotten his big contract.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Okogie's still playing on his rookie deal.
But yeah.
Yeah.
You have to embrace the tank if you're a Wolves fan. Just want this team to be bad and watch a lot of Duke basketball games, because that's your future could be playing on that team right now.
Tank for Zion Williamson.
Yes,
or
and I'm
RJ
not
Barrett.
Saying that they have to be bad for long, because if you get rid of everything except for Kat and Josh Okogie, and I cannot believe I'm saying this, but maybe Derrick Rose, And then next year, you've got a core of, like, let's just say Zion. Say you get the one or two pick and you get R.J. Barrett or Zion. Say you've got Kat, Okogie, Zion, and maybe Derrick Rose. You're like a year away from being in the playoffs. Like, this, you're not that far off.
But you know this coach is not going to embrace tanking whatsoever.
No, but this coach can't be around.
I know.
That's the problem.
I know. But you know as long as he is around, like, it's not going to – he's going to try and win every game like it's game 7 of the NBA Finals.
It's just, which is ridiculous.
I know. It's ridiculous. But – hey, this was fun, dude.
Absolutely. Can't wait to do it again.
Yes, this is the start of many, many more of these that we're going to have. And we're going to do these, for the most part, during the season, every Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday, Dane will be with us, and Danny will be with us on Thursdays. It's going to be a little bit of a shift as we get closer to Thanksgiving week. But for the most part, it's going to be kind of a Tuesday, Thursday thing. We're in these... new Raised by Wolves episodes we'll be posting. So, Danny, great stuff. And next time, man, it's going to be fun. Can't wait.
Me either.
All right. Much more Wolves basketball to come this season. So stick around. We're not going anywhere. Derrick James is still going to be a part of this pod as well. So look for his voice coming up soon again here too as well. For Danny Cunningham, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes, Podcast One, and 1500ESPN.com as well. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.